You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Welcome to The Deep Dive. Now, if you're like most people, your financial focus has probably been on, well, earning more, saving more, maybe investing. Standard stuff.
Right. Earn, save, invest, repeat.
Exactly. But it kind of begs the question, doesn't it? What's the point of piling up wealth if you don't actually know how to spend it? How to use it to, you know, genuinely make your life better?
That's the shift, isn't it? That's what we're digging into today. We're moving past the usual spreadsheets, the budgets, and looking at the psychology of spending, the art, maybe even the science behind it.
And we're drawing a lot from insights around Morgan Housel's work here.
Yeah, his reflections really highlight how emotional, how deeply personal spending decisions are. Often not very rational at all when you look closely.
It seems the real challenge is, well, it's about self-discovery, finding out what actually brings you, the listener, real, lasting happiness.
Mm-hmm. Because often we're throwing money at problems that aren't really financial problems deep down.
Right. So today we'll unpack some of these ideas. Things like the social traps, paradoxes of having wealth, and this really interesting idea that maybe the money you don't spend is the most valuable.
Okay, let's get into it. Where should we start? Maybe with those habits that serve us well.
Yeah.
Until they don't.
Yeah, let's start there. With what happens when good habits become, well, roadblocks. Okay, so one of the strangest things you see in personal finance, and maybe you've seen this with relatives, is frugality inertia.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Think about, say, your parents or grandparents, maybe a generation that, you know, grew up with less. And even now, maybe they're financially secure, millions saved, but they're still washing Ziploc bags, hoarding ketchup packets.
Yes, that's frugality inertia perfectly. It's that real difficulty switching gears.
Yeah.
They spend a lifetime building excellent savings habits. I mean, that's what made them wealthy, let's be clear.
Crucial habits.
Absolutely. But then they can't transition into a spending phase, can't enjoy the fruits of it. That savings muscle is just, it's too strong. They literally can't turn it off, even when it's totally safe to do so.
It's a powerful psychological barrier. But then there's this puzzle, right? If the next generation, their kids, don't have those same deep-rooted, frugal habits, well, are they going to build up the same kind of wealth adjusted for inflation?
That's the individual dilemma, yeah. Will history repeat? But the paradox gets even weirder when you zoom out, look at the whole economic system.
How so?
Well, the wealth of that super-saving retired generation, it was built in an economy that needs people to spend. It relies on consumerism for growth.
Ah, okay. I see where you're going.
So if their kids did somehow maintain that exact same level of extreme frugality, would the economy have grown enough for the parents to get wealthy in the first place? It's almost like it eats itself.
Ah. So hyper-saving might be great for the individual, but maybe not so great for the system that allowed the wealth creation. Interesting.
Yep, it's a tension for sure.
Okay, let's flip to the other side then. Earning more money. You'd think that equals more happiness from spending, but often it doesn't.
Right. This is that idea of the diminishing joy of spending. It's a real thing. As your income goes up, the actual satisfaction, the kick you get from buying something, tends to go down.
Why is that?
Because there's just less. Less struggle, sacrifice, and sweat wrapped up in the purchase. The effort isn't there in the same way.
Yeah, the joy gets diluted because it was too easy. Like when you were younger, saving up for 6 months for that watch or that trip felt amazing when you finally got it.
Exactly. Yeah. It was meaningful.
Fair.
Now, if it's just, I don't know, a few hours worth of your salary, the psychological hit is minimal. It doesn't land the same way.
So the high earner gets caught in this weird spot. Making more and spending more doesn't bring the expected happiness boost, but Obviously, making less money brings its own financial stress.
It's a frustrating loop.
Yeah.
You kind of snack.
Right.
So how do you break out of that? What do the sources point towards?
Well, the wisdom seemed pretty consistent, even if it sounds a bit cliche.
Huh, yeah, it often does. But it's usually cliche because it's true, right? The real insight is that genuine happiness tends to come from things like agency, freedom, control over your time, not just accumulating more stuff.
The ability to spend your time how you want.
Precisely. That seems to be the core truth. But it's something you have to consciously practice. Real satisfaction isn't just in the buying. It's in having control over your life itself.
Okay, so that internal thing, that diminishing joy, maybe that's why we start looking outwards, comparing ourselves.
A very human tendency.
And one big driver for spending is definitely that need for social validation. We see these trickle-down consumption patterns, social aspirations spending, I think it was called.
Yeah, basically keeping up with the Joneses, or maybe the Joneses just above you. It's classic status dynamics. One group copies the spending habits, the visible symbols of success, of the group just above them on the socioeconomic ladder.
Trying to close that perceived gap.
Exactly. Spending money to signal status.
But what about the flip side? What happens if your income goes down? Maybe a recession hits, or a personal setback.
Well, that aspiration can turn pretty quickly into something else. Social desperation. It's quite fascinating and a bit grim.
Desperation? How?
Instead of looking up and wanting what the wealthier group has, people might start looking down. They start judging, maybe criticizing, lower income groups for how they spend money. It's all about maintaining their own relative standing, even if it's by punching down.
Wow. So the comparison trap works both ways. Makes you miserable trying to climb up and miserable trying not to fall down.
Exactly. Which leads perfectly into that quote you mentioned. It was brilliant. If you only wish to be happy, this could be easily accomplished.
But we wish to be happier than other people, and this is always difficult, for we believe others to be happier than they are.
That just nails it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We're constantly suffering from this grass is greener thing. We look at someone's curated Instagram feed or their new car and assume they've got it all figured out, totally stress-free.
When in reality...
They're probably wrestling with their own comparisons, their own feelings of inadequacy. It raises this question about comfort versus, like, showing off comfort.
What's the difference there, economically speaking?
Well, think about it. It doesn't actually cost a fortune to live a genuinely comfortable life.
Yeah.
You know, safe place to live, decent food, reliable car, basic security and comfort.
Right. Achievable for many.
But it costs a heck of a lot more to constantly show off that you live a comfortable life. That extra spending, that's just marketing yourself. It's pure signaling, and it's almost always driven by comparing yourself to others.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's talk about another kind of cost then, one we often miss, the long-term cost. We get so fixated on the initial price.
Oh, absolutely. Huge blind spot for many people.
Yeah.
Think about something simple like clothes or shoes.
Okay.
You grab cheap boots, $50, they fall apart in 3 months. Or you invest, say, $200 in a pair that lasts 5 years. That initial saving disappears fast when you factor in replacement, hassle, time shopping again.
Right, the total cost of ownership.
Exactly. And it applies even more to big things. The material mentioned cars, like Toyota. Maybe not the absolute cheapest up front.
But known for reliability.
Right. Their real value shines through in low-maintenance durability. They win on life cycle cost, hands down.
That's a great example.
And you could even apply this logic to things that seem free, like technology, social media apps. Zero upfront cost, download away.
True, free to use.
But the long-term cost, in your time, your attention, your mental energy, maybe even mental health, it can be massive. You essentially bought it with your focus.
Mm-hmm.
And the ongoing cost of ownership is potentially astronomical.
Which kind of brings us to the link between our work, our stress levels, and how we spend. The sources suggested that sometimes excessive spending is really just compensation.
Yeah, like a direct reflection of how hard your job is or how much stress you endured to get that paycheck.
The classic retail therapy.
Exactly. I had a brutal 70-hour week. I deserved this expensive thing. You're essentially spending money to make up for having a job that makes you miserable, to justify it almost.
So if that's the symptom or the disease, what's the cure?
Well, the ideal antidote suggested is finding your vocation, your calling, work you actually enjoy.
Easier said than done sometimes.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
But the idea is if you find work that feels less like grinding labor and more like a, I don't know, a fun challenge, a quest.
Then the need to compensate diminishes.
That's the theory. You won't feel that same intense urge to spend money just to prove how hard you worked or to numb the pain of earning it, because the work itself provides some intrinsic reward.
But finding that calling often involves trying things, maybe failing, changing paths. People worry about looking foolish, right? To friends, family.
Absolutely. But the material argues you almost have to risk looking foolish. That experimentation is key. Because how else do you figure out what truly satisfies you on a deep level?
Good point.
And once you find work that clicks with your values, that external validation you get from buying fancy stuff, it just loses its power. The satisfaction becomes internal, you know, self-generated.
This connects really well to the next idea. Spending experimentation. The concept that we often don't know what spending will make us happy because we just haven't tried enough. Weird stuff.
Exactly. Not just weird, but different. New things. We get stuck in these consumption ruts, don't we? Same kind of car upgrades, same designer labels, same expensive restaurants.
Creatures of habit.
Totally. But maybe your thing, the spending that truly sparks joy for you, is funding some niche conservation project or backpacking in remote places or, I don't know, giving a significant chunk to charity. You'll never know unless you experiment.
And this is where that advice from Ramit Sethi, the financial expert, came in. It was called outstanding in the source material. What was his main point?
Sethi's core message, as I recall, is about consciously separating your financial goals from your identity. Stop letting your net worth define your self-worth. Instead, use money as a tool to figure out who you are and what you value. Then deliberately channel your resources towards those things you discover bring you joy. It might be travel over a bigger house, or hobbies over fancy clothes, or even giving money away instead of accumulating more possessions.
So you need to experiment to find your unique happiness triggers.
You really do. Be intentional about discovering what works for you, not just what society tells you should work. Hashtag tech tag outro.
So wrapping this up, what does it all mean for us? We've touched on these deep emotional drivers, trying to justify jobs we hate, chasing status, maybe making up for feeling poor growing up.
Yeah, it really seems the art of spending is less about budgets and more about understanding and managing those underlying emotional scripts that dictate our choices.
It's psychology as much as finance.
Definitely. And if you pull together the most profound advice from these insights, it really circles back to something interesting. Maybe the most valuable money is the money you haven't spent.
Right. That seems almost paradoxical for a deep dive on spending. How does that work?
Because that money you haven't spent, that buffer, it buys you something incredibly valuable, something you can't really buy directly.
Which is?
Freedom, independence, autonomy, the ability to control your own time, make your own choices. That financial cushion is agency over your life.
And that agency helps minimize future regret. Because you have control.
Exactly. It gives you options, gives you breathing room.
Okay, that really reframes things. Huh. We started out talking about how hard happiness is to achieve because we're always comparing ourselves, always feeling like we need to keep up.
Which leads to maybe a final thought for you, the listener, to chew on. What if happiness is actually our default state? What if the unhappiness is what we manufacture, mostly through that relentless comparison game?
So the default is contentment.
Perhaps. And if that's even partially true, then maybe the real art of spending isn't about cleverly deploying your dollars, but about learning where to deploy your focus. Spending your attention on what you truly value, not just on what everyone else seems to be advertising.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious to buy chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.